Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Every Friday at this time, we're joined by Clay Travis, Outkick the Coverage, Fox Sports Radio. He's presented by thehomeloanexpert.com.
Clay, your new show, Lock It In, on FS1. I had a chance to watch some of it. I thought it's very well done. I'm not a gambler, so I'm not as into it, but I thought the production of it was really good. What are your thoughts about a week and a half, I guess, into the show now?
I think it's gone pretty well. You know, we've only had 4 days, and we're doing something that's never existed before, which is do a daily one-hour show focused on sports gambling. As you just said, like, you're not a sports gambler. So I think one of the challenging things about this show is figuring out exactly what the tone is going to be so that a casual sports fan who is somewhat interested in sports gambling may still watch, and people who are hardcore sports gamblers will also watch. I also think this is an intriguing example of a niche market that could be insanely lucrative. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're selling a $4 million house, you don't come on a sports talk radio station and buy an advertisement on that sports talk radio station, right? Because the vast majority of the people who are in the $4 million house market are not going to be listening to sports talk radio. They might be, but it's probably not an efficient way to buy an ad. But if you were buying an ad in a luxury home magazine going to people who only have incomes of $500,000 or more, you would pay probably a lot more to reach a lot smaller audience, and it would be insanely lucrative for you. And I think sports talk radio in general is that way, right? Everybody who advertises on The Zone is trying to reach a male audience primarily between the ages of 25 and 54, right? And so the products that are advertised on here are great fits. And so as a result, The Zone can charge more to reach a sports audience than they would to reach an audience of the same number of people, which might not be a sports audience. And I circle all the way around to say this. I think that's going to be the way that sports gambling works too, because sports gamblers are so valuable in this era of deregulation of sports gaming, when every state is going to start to want to reach out and allow people to gamble. I think it's just going to be fascinating to see how the television programming adjusts to fit this new marketplace in a similar way to a certain extent, like fantasy sports. 15 years ago, I'm sure they put the first fantasy sports show on television, and people are like, what is this? What are people talking about? Like, why would I ever draft my own makeup team? And now fantasy sports is fairly mainstream. I think the legalization of sports gambling is going to make it a lot more mainstream. And I think there'll be a lot more shows like ours.
Two-part question, Clay. How do you find the time to do this TV show on top of everything else you're doing with the website, with your morning national radio show? And have you ever been presented with something that you wanted to do that you turned down because you just didn't have enough time to do it, or you decided, I don't want to take this thing on?
Yeah, I'm to that point now. I mean, first of all, it's all my schedule is insane. I mean, I wake up at 4:15 every morning. I mean, people, it's probably people who do that are listening to your show right now. It's not like I'm particularly unique. A lot of people work hard, but I wake up at 4:15 every morning and prep for the last little bit of my show, which starts at 5 a.m. and is on The Zone now from 5 to 6. So I'm live solo. You know, I've got a couple of producers, and obviously we have guests, but I'm live solo for 3 hours of radio. And then I finish that 3 hours of radio, usually go downstairs. I can do the show from my house, which helps. I walk the kids to school. And then I come back home and I sit down in front of my computer and I start grinding on whatever I'm going to write for the day. And then I try to take a little bit of a break to eat lunch. And then I start getting ready for the Outkick Periscope and Facebook show. I do it too for a half hour. And obviously throughout that entire day, I've got multiple calls that I'm also doing to prepare for the television show, which is going to be an hour long that's on from 3:30 to 4:30 on FS1. So, look, I mean, that's the thing that is the most challenging to me, is just how do I not get burned out with everything that I'm doing. And also, by the way, I've got a book coming out on September 25th. So, yeah, I do turn down a lot of things. I don't do much socially. You know, I used to be out and about regularly.
Drinking sangria.
Yeah, hanging out at bars and restaurants, it's rare that I'm out. You know, I mean, I spend time working and then I'm with my family and that's kind of it. You know, I work and I hang out with my family and that's like 99% of my time.
Clay Travis is with us, presented by thehomeloanexpert.com.
I'm going to talk to you through this simply, and then you're going to do something you've rarely done before and admit an error. You don't just get to reframe your stance on Nike as is convenient to you. The price day one went down after the Kaepernick stuff, and you unquestionably made it like this is a very telling thing. Nike's relationship with Kaepernick is the doom of the stock price. It was up the next day, and people came at you, and you were silent about it. It's now up markedly, and you say, hey, thanks, everybody, for letting me know about it, but the verdict really is going to be long-term. People are telling you about it, and you're annoyed. Well, we're annoyed that you overreacted the first day. So just say, I overreacted the first day. It's a longer-range proposition than I let on that first day when the numbers served my hypothesis, and we'll have to see.
I don't think I overreacted the first day unless you think that the Wall Street Journal overreacted by putting that.
The Wall Street Journal has written stuff since then about okay. How it's changed. You
and,
have not.
And I understand that. If you want to go back through my Twitter history on Friday of last week, I said, look, here's what the stock has done since. Here's the online sales. I tweeted out the Marketplace CBS article that said online sales are up 31%. And I said, the truth of the matter is, we will have to wait months to see the overall impact on Nike's brand, if any, of the signing of Colin Kaepernick. My belief is that it will have a negative impact on the brand. I then don't think it's my job to tweet every day what Nike stock is doing. What's it doing today? I don't know. Is it up or down? I sent out, I think earlier this week, I said, hey, I appreciate the fact that you guys want me to update you like every minute. I mean, I've sent out a lot of tweets reflecting on the fact that the stock has gone in a different direction. I think what happens is people choose, like you have, to pick whichever tweets they don't like and focus on those and not focus on the others. My hypothesis, I'm paid for my opinion. My opinion is it's bad for Nike's brand to alienate any of their customers by signing Colin Kaepernick. You can certainly take the other side and say, you know what? They are going to make up more money by signing Colin Kaepernick than they're going to lose by alienating people. That's the great thing about markets. The market ultimately will decide. The market, since going down, has come back, and basically Nike stock is somewhere similar to where it was beforehand. What will the long-range impact be? I've been consistent on this. I said last week we won't know for months because the people who decide not to buy Nikes are not going to do it over the next several months. They're going to buy other products instead, and I think what's most likely is the people who support Nike signing Colin Kaepernick are going to immediately buy the product. And the question we will find out, which we don't know the answer for right now, is in the long range, is it going to be a net benefit or a net positive or net negative for Nike? And so I don't think I've done anything other than share both sides. What I think has happened is people who were upset with me for saying the stock price went down the next day are upset with me because now the stock price is going up. And I don't understand. Like, what do you want me to do? Just daily update everybody every hour?
No, the tweets matter. The strength of the tweets matter.
I'll say this. I'm in a difficult spot here because I actually agree with you that it's a bad business decision by Nike, and I didn't like the initial decision to do this. But you use words like disaster the day after that. Look at these stock prices. This is a disaster for Nike. You said things like that. I didn't see a lot of tweets about, guys, this is just one day. This is a natural stock thing. It's going to change. We'll have to wait months from now. And you also have to agree, Clay, let me finish. You also have to agree that saying now, we're going to have to wait for months from now until we really know the answer. That's convenient for you because no one's going to be talking about this months from now and whether or not Nike went up or down, and you'll be on to the next thing at that point.
First of all, it's always great for me when people care about my opinion. So people are like, oh, you're so upset. No, it's great. Like, when anything happens, and the first thing people think is, oh, Clay Travis was right about this, or oh, Clay Travis was wrong about this, that's great for me. I'm in the opinion business. If I were 100% right about everything, I'd be Warren effing Buffett, right? I wouldn't be sitting around talking about sports. I would be a multi-billionaire who did not talk about anything. I just made my secret moves from a financial hedge fund and equity analyst perspective. I wouldn't do anything publicly. I wouldn't want people to know how smart I was, right? I share my opinion. Sometimes people agree with it. Sometimes people disagree with it. My opinion is it's a bad move for Nike. I don't think there's anybody out there that doesn't understand my opinion. my also belief is that I will share information that doesn't support my opinion. Like, I don't know what people want me to say. I don't think I'm wrong. So I'm not going to say I think I'm wrong. And I don't think it's crazy at all to say that it will take months to know whether I'm right or wrong. I mean, that's how the market works. And so the fact that the stock price is up, I've shared it. The fact that the stock price immediately went down, I shared it. I'm going to be publishing thousands of words about it on my website the minute that I hang up with you guys. So I don't know. I mean, one thing I will say in general is I'm spending less time on social media. So I understand it's a good position for me to be in that everybody wants me to immediately respond to every single thing that happens throughout the course of the day, because that's kind of what social media does. I frankly, like Withrow asked this question to begin with, one of the things I've had to do with all of the things that I have going on now is spend less time on social media. So there are now hours, and this is something that I think is probably good in general. There are now hours where I am not on my phone monitoring what the news is. For instance, it's right now 11:15. I have not been on Twitter, I don't believe, since 9:30. So I don't know what the news is for the last hour and 45 minutes of the day, because I literally haven't been on and checked it, because I've been working on my bell bag, because I've been doing the phone call for the television show, all of those things. So I guess people want me to say, hey, I was wrong, I'm changing my opinion. I'm not changing my opinion. I think my opinion is right, and I think it will be proven correct in the months ahead. If it's not right, look, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I've been wrong a lot before. I lost $50,000 selling pants. You know, like, I've literally put my money into the worst businesses that you can before and lost money. So, you know, I don't know. I guess some people have more of an allegiance to their opinion than I do. I want my opinions to be correct, but if they're wrong, it's not like I sit around like lamenting the fact that I got something wrong. I go ahead and keep talking about what I think.
David Williams will retire either at the end of the year or whenever they find his replacement at Vanderbilt. Two-part question. What will you remember most about David Williams and the job he did at Vandy, and who, or if you're writing the description of the next AD at Vandy, who should they be looking for?
Those are two really good questions. The first one is a lot easier to answer. I love David Williams. And so I will think about him as a former law school teacher. So in addition to the fact that he was an athletic director, I got to know him through law school, and I thought he was brilliant. I thought that he was smart. And I think, and I don't think, I know this, he was the kind of lawyer that is good at understanding how the world works while still being really smart. And that might sound confusing to people, but to me, the people who are the best at explaining things can understand a complex situation so well that they can make it understandable to someone who is not as smart as they are. And I'll give you an example. He knows tax law backwards and forwards, right? And tax law sounds like it is really boring. The reality is tax law is amazingly entertaining and complex and fascinating when you actually get into the details. And the tax code is in general too. It's a very creative and dynamic process. He made the tax code entertaining. And he explained it in a way that somebody like me, who is not by any stretch of the imagination a financial wizard, could really find that to be a compelling topic. So, and I think, by the way, a lot of lawyers are not necessarily financial wizards. So I will think about him in that way. I also think, look, he's got Tim Corbin there. He's won a national championship. He hired James Franklin, who is the most successful coach in Vanderbilt, the last 60 years of Vanderbilt football or something along those lines. And I think he's got a really good basketball coach in Bryce Drew. So I think he has left the university in decent shape in two of those three sports. And we'll see. Look, if Derek Mason went up to Notre Dame and Vandy pulled off the upset, people would be saying, like, hey, man, can you believe David Williams was so smart to stick behind Derek Mason like he has? And so as for what Vanderbilt needs, I think it's a really hard question. I think you need somebody who is able to work well within a complex bureaucracy. I think you need someone who is going to understand the unique challenges of Vanderbilt as the only private institution among 13 football crazy SEC universities. And I think you need someone who is, one thing David Williams did that I loved was he met with every recruit in a way that I don't think your average athletic director has to be plugged in. Vanderbilt, I think, only has a population of about 6,000 students. So if 85 of them play football and are on scholarship, that's actually a pretty substantial portion of the student body. he wanted to make sure that when those guys got into Vanderbilt, they were able to excel and that they left in a better position than they did before. I think a lot of athletic directors at big football powerhouses don't have to be as involved in the nitty-gritty of individual decisions. I think the one at Vanderbilt does.
Clay, what did you make of Serena Williams getting into it with the chair umpire? Just that incident, but also, I think more importantly, the reaction to what happened and what you've seen since then.
Well, I mean, just think about it this way. If I got pulled over for speeding, and when the police officer came to the window, and I was definitely speeding, the police officer came to the window, and he came in, and he's like, hey, I got you going 85 and a 60. And I said, well, I understand that, but I've got three kids. I think most of you would be like, what? Like, what are you talking about? I thought Serena's reaction there, look, you've seen me with Roe. Like, I've gotten into it with umpires before in a lot less serious events than the U.S. Open.
During a kickball game, you actually threatened an umpire. Or you
the
told
U.S.
Them,
Open of kickball.
Yeah,
it was
you,
amazing.
You told them that it was a great line. You said that if this was a South American soccer match, you'd be executed for that call.
Yeah.
For this decision.
For sure. And look, I mean, it was funny. It's not like I threatened the official or anything. But, I mean, I get upset when bad calls are made, like I think a lot of other people do. And so I totally get losing your cool, even getting angry at the official. What I thought was crazy was the idea that somehow Serena Williams turned herself into a victim there, and that so many other people were willing to climb on board that victim train. I don't know when it happened in this country, but it used to be that nobody wanted to be a victim, right? Like, I was raised, you know, if a bully's picking on you, stand up for yourself and fight against them. Now everybody says, oh, if a bully's picking on you, like, curl up in the fetal position until other people notice that you're getting your ass kicked. I don't personally agree with that. And, you know, the teacher comes and saves you. I think that is a difference in society in general, right? And so Serena Williams saying, hey, you know, this is an example of women being treated differently, and then it's somehow turning into, oh, this is how black women are treated differently. Like, she was playing against a black woman who is from Japan, right, who was raised here in America. The chair umpire was a minority. Like, Serena Williams was treated the way she was because she was caught breaking the rules. Her coach admitted that he was coaching her. And when they went back and looked at the number of U.S. Open violations and point violations that were assessed, men got 88 of them, I think it was, and women got 22. Now, men play more sets and more longer matches sometimes, but it wasn't being she wasn't being discriminated against because she was a woman. So I just think the way that a lot of these stories play out, I thought it was a bad look for Serena. I think she could have been like, look, I lost my cool. I regret it. You know, I think anytime your response when you get called on something is to say, I'm a parent. I think it's a bad excuse because she said she was a mom. I mean, almost every woman in America today is at some point in time going to be a mom. It doesn't excuse you from making poor decisions, and it certainly doesn't make you a victim.
Well, do you think Vandy has a chance in South Bend this weekend?
I do. I actually do. I don't think that's a crazy – I mean, I think the line is right around two touchdowns. I like Kyle Shurmur. I think he's as good of a quarterback as Vandy has had, maybe since Jay Cutler. I think he can make all the throws that they need. I'm convinced, convinced myself anyway, that Notre Dame, I think, is a little bit overvalued based on the way that they performed against Michigan. I think the performance they put up against Ball State is more emblematic of what this team is than what we saw against Ball State. Now, look, last year Vandy was 2-0, I believe, and Alabama was coming to town. And I thought, you know what? I think Vandy's better than they have been in years past. I think they're going to be able to be somewhat competitive with Alabama. And then I think the score was 59-0, if I'm not mistaken. I think Alabama just came out and throttled them. And so I could be wrong. Look, Notre Dame could run up and down the field all over Vanderbilt, but I actually expect this game to be close going into the fourth quarter.
Clay Travis joins us weekly, presented by thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay, Home Loan Expert's actually out here today.
Yeah, Ryan Kelly's out here golfing. Dixon.
Yeah, I went out to dinner last night with he and Catfish Jake. I think they're in the Withrow set them up, so they have an incredible golf ability there.
I'm a matchmaker, Clay. What can I say?
Yeah.
I'm bringing people together.
Yeah, we had a great dinner last night, and he's out there for the Fight DMV event. And Ryan Kelly's just a genuinely good dude. And obviously a lot of people in Nashville are familiar with the battle that's being fought against Duchenne muscular dystrophy and how well and how good of a job Terry Marlin and everybody associated with him has been trying to do fighting that awful disease. And look, Ryan Kelly's been a big part of it, and he's interested in our community. He's even contemplating moving into the Nashville area. I don't know if he wants me to say that, but he's been looking at homes in the area himself. he's just really sort of enamored and in love with our community, as many people are who are fortunate enough to live here. And if you are living here, you know what's the challenge? Everybody's been there at some point. You've had a credit card bill that you couldn't afford to pay. You had to walk down to your mailbox. You pulled that thing out. Maybe you sat down in front of your computer and you pulled it up and you said, man, that is a big bill. I had a lot of stuff that I spent money on that I either didn't know I was going to have to do, or maybe I just spent way too much money that month, and it can pile up and it's over 20% interest. Why not wipe it all out in one fell swoop this fall before it even gets into the holiday season? If you own your home, we're fortunate here in Nashville because home prices have been increasing in a rapid fashion. If you own your home, why not take some of that money that you've built up, that equity, wipe out all your credit card debt, replace it with a low interest mortgage rate, and put your financial house in order? You can trust Ryan Kelly to do it. TheHomeLoanExpert.com. Get hooked up today. That's TheHomeLoanExpert.com.
Clay Travis has been our guest.